today, you can't call former Senator Ted Stevens a convicted felon anymore. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. Judge Emmett Sullivan granted a prosecution motion to set aside Stevens' conviction today. Do you feel cheated? Are you glad? Both? Our number 1-800-478-8255, toll free 478-TALK. In Anchorage, a local call at 550-8422. Email talk@APRN.org. Ted Stevens is again the subject on Talk of Alaska statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by the Association of Alaska School Boards. Parents that read to their children foster early learning and educational development for children and youth. Information at aasb.org.
While many Alaskans were still in bed, Senator Ted Stevens was walking into a courtroom this morning a little before 6 o'clock because he was about to see his status change. Judge Emmett Sullivan had a hearing, entertained motions by the prosecution in the Stevens case. Ted Stevens was convicted last fall of failing to disclose gifts, but prosecution misconduct came to light, and as a result, his conviction has now been set aside by Judge Emmett Sullivan. APRN's Libby Casey joins us from her office at the APRN Washington, D.C. Bureau. Libby was in the courtroom this morning. Libby, was it emotional?
It certainly was for former Senator Ted Stevens and his family. After this finally wrapped up, his daughters were in tears, and there were many hugs and handshakes. Ted Stevens was very strong and commanding. He spoke, this is the first time he's really sort of spoken out about the case, and he spoke to the judge and in sort of a strong, booming voice thanked the court and the judge, his team of lawyers, and the new prosecutors who have uncovered some more of these prosecutorial problems. And he also thanked Alaskans and said he's traveled the state and almost everyone has told them that they're saying a prayer for him. He did say that his faith in the justice system had really been nearly destroyed by this experience, but after today, it was restored.
Now, Judge Emmett Sullivan, throughout the trial, reprimanded repeatedly, and at one point, I believe he even issued an order against the prosecution for failing to share information that they had with the Stevens defense team. So what was the judge's attitude today when it came out from the Obama Justice Department now that they thought the case was bungled too?
Well, the judge started off today by going back in time and saying, how did we get here? You know, before we decide what to do with Ted Stevens, how did we get here? And he went through a litany of problems that the Justice Department has had during the trial and after the trial. And it included not turning over interviews the FBI had done with witnesses. It included moving a witness and also withholding some documents. And when these things happened during the trial, it always happened early enough in the proceedings that the judge could say, well, hold on, let's fix it. But after the case wrapped up, more evidence came to light, and the judge was just very, very upset, and he said that it was disturbing and that this is just, he's never seen anything approaching this in his nearly 25 years on the bench when it comes to mishandling and misconduct in a case. And he also, Steve, has appointed a special prosecutor who does not work for the government to look into exactly what happened at the Justice Department. He also called, you know, former Attorney General Mukasey's actions shocking because Ted Stevens' lawyers had written to Mukasey, who was appointed under President Bush, multiple times asking for somebody to look into what was going on, and he didn't even send a reply back or an acknowledgement that he'd received that note.
Libby, I'm sure you remember from your days in the courtroom following this trial, Cliff Groh, the Alaska attorney who chose on his own dime to fly to Washington and watch this trial and blog from it. He's our guest here. Cliff, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thanks, Steve. And I want to thank Libby for her coverage today and throughout the trial and in the post-trial proceedings.
Well, your blog, by the way, is called what?
AlaskaCorruption.com, and you can just Google Alaska Corruption or my name, Cliff Groh, and it'll come up.
Now, I don't imagine you were entirely surprised by what happened today because it was going, you know, I mean, we kind of knew from the moment that the Obama administration had the press conference how this was going to roll down. But it sure does put a last chapter on that book you're writing, doesn't it?
Actually, it's about the Alaska public corruption investigation generally, which obviously still faces questions about what will occur now.
Oh, we haven't seen the last chapter.
No, I don't think so in terms of other individuals or even, as Libby was saying, Steve, about what will happen in terms of the prosecution here in terms of either the internal Department of Justice investigation or the attorney that Judge Sullivan chose to conduct some a probe for in terms of his involvement in deciding what penalties he may impose for contempt of court.
So you got some questions for Libby here?
I do. Libby, I guess what I really wanted to get at is sort of what the human side of this was like, particularly in terms of obviously throughout the trial, Senator Stevens sat quietly and except in terms of when he himself testified. He wouldn't talk to the press during the trial. His lawyers wouldn't talk to the press either. And I guess I wanted to sort of see what it was like in terms of sort of what it was like just being there at this unusual event today, both in terms of this trial and in terms of American justice generally.
Well, it really is hard to put into words, I think, in terms of seeing Alaskan history unfold, because, of course, Senator Stevens was Alaska senator for so long, for four decades, and to see it end like this has been such a monumental piece of Alaskan history. But it took a lot of bizarre turns. I mean, I haven't covered a whole lot of court cases, so when problems started to go wrong, I would turn to my colleagues at the New York Times or the Washington Post and say, "This isn't normal, is it?" And they would say, "No." You know, and then we would talk to legal experts to get some perspective, and other lawyers, and like yourself, Cliff, and we would realize that the problems the Justice Department was having were really incredible. And as the judge said, some of this stuff is very shocking. So on that level, it was a really intense experience. And then to see Senator Stevens stand up in court today and kind of say this chapter is over in his life was also significant, because it is a major chapter in his life and also in Alaskan, you know, in sort of Alaskan legal proceedings and Alaska politics. He didn't talk to the press much as when he left the courthouse. He walked out arm in arm with three of his daughters, with his wife nearby, and he did not stop at a bay of microphones that all the big networks had set up. But as he was coming out, I asked him if he had a message for Alaskans, and he just said that he was going to go out and enjoy the day. And then he got in a van and pulled away. So I think there's a lot of celebration right now among him and his staff and family.
Well, Senator Stevens, this was a crowded courtroom, I would imagine.
Absolutely, Steve. It was just packed.
And among those in attendance, I would think, would be people that have known him for a long time, his colleagues, perchance, and certainly his ex-staffers, some of whom are influential lobbyists now. So that must have been quite the scene as he's making his way through the crowd, leaving the courtroom.
Yeah, I didn't see any of his fellow senators there, although there was an overflow room that had more seating. Although some of, a couple of senators did testify on his behalf during the trial. But a lot of his staffers were around. And I saw some of them last week when they were sort of celebrating the news that Attorney General Eric Holder was going to have this all thrown out. And they see this as, I mean, they, of course, feel that Ted Stevens is innocent, and they believe in their boss. So they see this as finally justice having been done. That's their perspective. And so it was very emotional for them today, you know, to see a room full of some grown men, you know, sort of tears in their eyes. He had a very close relationship with his staff, as many senators do. That's a common thing. You know, it's interesting because we, of course, have to talk about, well, what does this case really mean? It's not that the attorney general and the judge said today, Ted Stevens, you are innocent of all charges, and we were wrong to ever bring this case into court. That's not what happened here. They have said that the prosecution was bungled so badly that he deserves an apology and that the case should be thrown out.
The case could be thrown out. Does that mean that it is the conviction is thrown out? That did happen by the judge's action, right?
That's right. He essentially swept that away. The conviction was thrown out. And what would happen next is the Justice Department would say, well, we'd have a new trial. But Attorney General Eric Holder said, no, no new trial. This is done. Because of the circumstances of this case, namely the bungled prosecution, and also the fact that Senator Stevens is no longer in office. He's no longer senator. And he's 85 years old. The Attorney General decided it just wasn't worth going forward.
Yeah. Cliff Grow, what happens here technically? In other words, do we say Ted Stevens is not guilty? He is acquitted now.
Well, no, obviously not acquitted. I guess what we say is, and this actually came up in the period between the time the jury rendered the verdicts and the election, Ted Stevens says, I have been convicted. In a technical sense, what he was saying, there was not a judgment of conviction. In a criminal case, normally you get a judgment of conviction from the judge, which includes the sentence. In most cases, Steve, of course, that happens in misdemeanors instantaneously, right? You know, there's a conviction by the jury comes back with a guilty verdict, and the judge proceeds to sentencing. Even in felonies, there's usually a short period for a pre-sentence report by a probation officer, and then there's the sentencing. What was so unusual in this case, of course, was the months and months of post-trial proceedings. The jury returned the guilty verdicts, of course, in late October. And we went all the way until April, until we have this decision by the judge to grant the prosecutor's motion to set aside the jury verdicts, is the technical term. Set aside the jury verdicts and dismiss the case with prejudice. As Libby was saying, one of the many unusual things about this is that the Attorney General decided to essentially, as I said on a public radio last week, shoot the case in the head, not just agree to they have a new trial, but to say this case shouldn't even be retried. It does leave it in a legally, and some people would say, ethically messy situation in terms of there's not really an assessment or evaluation that will finally be rendered by the court system on the charges the Department of Justice initially brought last year.
Libby, I think we'll let you get back to writing your story. Good work this morning. And is there any other observations you feel we didn't cover here you'd like to bring in?
Well, you know, this has big implications not only for Ted Stevens and his personal life, but also for the government at large, because the judge, as we mentioned, is having a special prosecutor look into exactly what happened at the Department of Justice. And he made some very strong statements today about concerns he has about how the Justice Department is operating. He's a huge fan of Eric Holder. He actually served with him before, so he's saying that Eric Holder is doing the right thing. But he said that what he'd like to see is Holder and the president make some changes here. When they select new U.S. attorneys, he wants to see them commit to being able to fulfill proper obligations. And he wants to see Eric Holder make sure that all of his prosecutors, new, experienced, veteran, are given special training about turning over evidence. Because what fell apart here is that the Justice Department lawyers did not turn over evidence. So this has ripple effects. And he said anyone, whether it's a private citizen, a public servant, or someone who's in Guantanamo Bay, they deserve a fair day in court, and he feels Ted Stevens did not get that here. As hard as the judge tried to make that happen, it didn't happen.
And the judge already had a person in mind to be a special prosecutor?
Yes, he actually already has someone. His name's Henry Schulke, and he has worked for the government before, but now is a respected lawyer in Washington, and he will be looking into this. And it sounds like the Justice Department will be cooperating. And the judge listed off quite a few lawyers at the Justice Department, including some in Alaska, who have been involved in the other corruption investigations. So we'll see what the ripple effects of this are.
Yeah, I guess this could get really interesting for the whole way that the Justice Department, this public integrity section has always been thought to be quite independent of political interference. And the fact that somehow they messed this one up so bad, maybe because it's so unprecedented to be dealing with a sitting U.S. senator, and they just got the jitters, I can't really say. But it'll be so interesting to find out what really went on inside there. And then to see what the consequences are for the existing probe that's going on that many of us feel isn't over yet.
That's right. And, you know, Steve, the judge asked if this know, there's an FBI whistleblower complaint that was filed by an FBI agent who from the Anchorage field office who worked on the Stevens case, and the judge asked Department of Justice lawyers if that would be made public, the results of that investigation, and they said they don't know yet. They will turn that over to the court, but we don't know if we will actually be able to find out what that uncovers, because a lot of this internally just doesn't get out, and that's why the judge is appointing a special prosecutor to look into it, because he wants it public, and he is really distressed at the way this has all gone. One last thing, I'm interested to kind of hear, I guess, what Cliff has to say since he sat through the whole trial. So much of this, the problems have surrounded Bill Allen, the former head of VECO, but there were other allegations against Ted Stevens regarding other gifts that had nothing to do with Allen. And I guess the thought is, for a lot of people down here, is that a massage chair, a sculpture, a stained glass window, things that were not reported on Stevens' financial disclosure forms, but were brought up during the trial, and the thought is perhaps those maybe are ethics violations that could have been dealt with in the Senate rather than actually coming to federal court.
Some people had asked about this case, and there's a number of interesting questions, and some people just asked that question of how the case got brought. And as Libby, as Steve said earlier, it was the Justice Department under President George W. Bush that brought these charges. I've heard, and everyone who has looked at this knows, that several people who were high-ranking officials in the Justice Department under President George W. Bush, who were Republican political appointees, way above the pay grade of the public integrity section lawyers, that they personally approved this prosecution that was very strikingly announced on July 29th, 2008, less than 3.5 months before the longest sitting ever, the most senior Republican U.S. senator ever in the history of the country, Ted Stevens, was facing what anybody with a brain knew was a real live opponent in Mark Begich, you know, independent of legal issues that arose about Senator Stevens. And so the question of how that happened is a very interesting one. And I guess I think of two turning points in life. There are many that are stand out, but two of the turning points in life, it seems to me, are just like I think that Senator Stevens has sat for months and wished that he had never asked Bill Allen to help him renovate his chalet in Girdwood. I think that the prosecutors and the trial prosecutors in the Ted Stevens trial wished they had accepted the offer of and granted the request of the Stevens defense team that came the day after the indictment to turn over all the files, to basically have an open file policy, because those Stevens prosecutors, independent of any of the personal consequences they might face as a result of these investigations we've been talking about into their own conduct, their big concern obviously was, in part, was the fear that turning over all the evidence would hurt the other cases against other potential defendants. But now those other potential defendants may obviously breathe more easily because the overall federal investigation into Alaska public corruption is going to be stalled out by what's happened in the Stevens trial.
You can't imagine that this kept them all pretty busy here.
Right.
Libby, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks to both of you.
Thank you, Libby. Back to work now. Okay, I think we'll open up the phone lines here. The telephone number is 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. There seem to be like two schools of thought. One school of thought is, look, Stevens is still guilty. These were just technicalities. This is, after all, just some discovery stuff. And they made the mistake of not disclosing it. But that doesn't necessarily cast much doubt on the evidence that was presented in court. And even if it wasn't that evidence, there's plenty of other evidence. And then there's the other side that says maybe we need a new election, that obviously this was so badly bungled that there is no case against Ted Stevens. Where do you come down on it? A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email talk@aprn.org. And the toll-free number, 1-800-478-8255. Well, let's start with you, Cliff Groh. Were these really technicalities? I mean, just because there are some notes saying that Bill Allen said one thing when he wasn't on the stand, and then when he was on the stand, he had improved memory. I mean, you know, in prosecution, that sort of thing happens all the time.
I do think that witnesses frequently have differing accounts, especially when they're interviewed more than 20 times over a two-year period, as Bill Allen was. And also, it's widely known that Bill Allen is a convicted felon himself in terms of public corruption, and as a man who has had a brain injury as a result of a motorcycle accident back in 2001. He continued running Vico. It was after the large multinational company after that, and also critically for this trial, kept spending a whole bunch of time with Ted Stevens, including, and I think this is one of the factors that I think that Ted Stevens clearly has had occasion to rue for months and months and months, is that he went on all those vacations with this senior U.S. senator who has been so powerful and so influential in Alaska, kept going on vacation year after year for a week on these boot camps, just he and Bill Allen, off in the desert, as was talked about, it came out at the trial. This is obviously a Ted Stevens day in terms of the conviction going away. I would say that it's ironic that Ted Stevens co-sponsored the law that he was eventually prosecuted under, and he also was voted, it appears, at least once for its reauthorization. Prosecutors have great power in our system, Steve, and are held to very substantially high standards, and that's obviously part of the story that's come out today.
Our guest is Cliff Grow. He's an attorney, a blogger with a website called HTTP, Alaska Corruption Blogspot.com. And he's writing a book about this this situation. He has a long – he's Alaskan born and raised and a practicing attorney in Alaska, and has worked both the criminal side and geez, you've been a legislative aide even.
and also I worked on oil tax issues while special assistant to the Commissioner of Revenue in the 80s. And that obvious familiarity helped me in terms of writing about oil taxes, which have been the focus of corruption trials in Alaska already.
All right. Let's go to the caller, Shelley, first off from Delta Junction. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Shelley.
Thank you. Yes, I'm really happy to hear that your guests have mentioned the fact that this doesn't exonerate Ted Stevens. It just it says that the prosecution put together a really terrible, inept trial. I mean, let's not forget that we heard with our own ears Ted Stevens talking on the phone with Bill Allen, saying, oh, well, you know, geez, the worst that can happen is a fine, or maybe even go to jail. His exact words, I hope to Christ that it doesn't come to this. So let's not forget that we did hear him essentially conspiring with Bill Allen, and that there were significant charges. And even if there weren't, say this did exonerate Ted Stevens, it's absolutely absurd for people to say that that Bagot should step down. To say that this was a reason that he lost is just speculation. You don't overturn an election on somebody's wishful thinking.
Yeah, Shelley, but one thing, perhaps Alaskans might feel cheated of their clout in Congress nonetheless. I mean, this is an awful lot of seniority. Alaska is a very small population state. It still gets two senators, and it lost a huge amount of clout when it lost its most senior senator.
Well, how could the majority of Alaskans feel cheated when that's who they voted for? They voted knowing that they would lose, they would put in a first-term senator and lose a long-term.
Right, and you don't think there were a great many Alaskans who voted that way just because Ted Stevens was a convicted felon and they weren't about to vote for him?
No, I don't really, well, you know, that could be part of it. But I don't think that was it. I think that hearing him conspire with Bill Allen, hearing the exact, you know, figures and amounts and that sense of entitlement that, you know, you heard from Bill Allen and that other person in Girdwood talk about, oh, you know, Ted doesn't want us to send him invoices, and or we send him invoices, but they're just, you know, they're just fake invoices.
CYA.
Yeah, I think that people hearing that, I think that had a lot more impact than the actual conviction.
All right. Because,
and, you know, I just think that we voted, and you can't overturn that because you have to also consider that they may not have just dismiss the whole case if Stevens were still in office. They may have pursued it. So there's a lot of ifs. But the fact is that, Begich won, and that's how, we have to deal with that.
Yeah, and I don't think that the move to try and get a new election is going to go anywhere whatsoever. It's pretty much DOA, I think. This one came in over the from Tom in Fairbanks. Number one, if Stevens hadn't asked for a fast-track trial and it hadn't happened before the election, he probably would have been reelected. Two, had he been reelected, justice would probably be refiling the charges. Very interesting speculation.
That's entirely possible. And I want to stress that given the kind of charges these were, in a white-collar crime charges against a sitting U.S. senator, the trial would not have occurred within 2 months of the filing of the indictment the way that it did, except for Stevens' insistence that the demand that the judge grant him that. And as a matter of fact, I think that if Senator Stevens hadn't demanded a quick trial, Steve, it might not have started yet. These trials
Seriously.
Often occur 10 months to a year after the indictment comes out, which would have meant might have started next month.
Well, would they have thrashed out that discovery stuff a little bit more thoroughly, maybe?
I do think that one of the factors that may occur and that may be found in these multiple investigations of why this happened was the speed in which this occurred. The judge would never hear it. He'd always tell the prosecutors, hey, you agreed to it. You acquiesced. You can't complain now. But I don't think they thought that it would ever happen quite this fast. I do think that might be found as one of the factors of why this occurred.
Steve from Wasilla, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Hi, how you doing?
Pretty good. Well, actually, I'm just having a field day.
I guess so. Wow, what a story. I mean, this is like the bombshell.
Yeah.
Top of the bombshell.
Yeah.
I guess my feeling is that one tape conversation where Ted warned Bill Allen, be careful what you're saying because we might be getting taped, and since Ted Stevens is a lawyer and, he knows how to skirt the law, I just kind of feel like that, what they had here was kind of like maybe the tip of the iceberg. But my real concern, though, is this misconduct in the Justice Department, because, we've heard of a lot of misconduct in the Justice Department over the last few years. And I actually worked in the DOD for a while. And what I found is in the federal bureaucracy, misconduct is pretty common. you have, and I think it's because the baby boomers are getting older, and you've got a lot of these kind of conservative old men, and they tend to be very egotistical, and a lot of them have drinking problems. And, these guys are just, they tend to become so self-righteous that they just don't know the difference between right and wrong anymore. And not only is there, and then you get these, like, little crony organizations where they back each other up and they start getting, this feeling like they can get away with anything. And there's a lot of complacency in the federal bureaucracy, too. I mean, a lot of people are just, there's good people in there, but they're just happy to sit in their cubicles and not make any waves or take on, any of the bad guys.
Yeah. But, well, I will say that, Nicholas March and the other members of the prosecution team that I got to watch in action seemed very dedicated and very motivated.
I guess if I saw problems in my own experience watching trials that Steve had, although I was able obviously to watch the Stevens trial as well as the trials in Alaska, most of the trials in Alaska, I don't think drinking problems or sort of boomer complacency were ever the issues. Or to answer another point that I sometimes hear or read on blogs, people say, well, did the Republican Justice Department want to go in the tank to help Stevens? That wasn't it either. None of those kinds of speculations make any sense to me after watching the Stevens trial and some other trials. If anything, there was maybe some overzealousness perhaps that might have clouded judgment if in fact there's found to be some deliberate or more intent that is found in the reasons why some of these problems that Libby described in the prosecution occurred.
Steve?
Well, Okay, well, that's good to hear, you know. But I do think that just, you know, I want to bring this up as a general thing that, you know, I think that we really need to keep these strong organizational-type controls to, you know, to prevent, like, these egomaniacs from doing this kind of stuff and messing up the whole system.
All right. Thank you so much, Steve.
You're welcome. Thank you.
It's Talk of Alaska. Our guest is Cliff Groh, who blogged the Ted Stevens trial. And we'll get back to your comments as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from BP Alaska. BP, where training Alaska's future workforce is a priority.
It's Talk of Alaska. In case you haven't heard, Senator Ted Stevens' conviction was set aside by Judge Emmett Sullivan this morning in a Washington, D.C. courtroom, and we're looking at the reactions of Alaskans and also have with us Cliff Groh, a practicing attorney in Anchorage, Alaska, who went to the Stevens trial and blogged from it and so managed to watch all the kind of ins and outs of that trial. It was an awfully fast-track trial, wasn't it? I mean, it was kind of odd, really, that the prosecution even agreed to do it that fast.
I guess they felt that they needed to after they indicted him so close to the election that they couldn't really turn it down. And he said he needed to do it to clear his name and then come back and campaign after he thought he would be acquitted.
Well, let's go back to the phones here. And this is Inez from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thank you. My feeling is that Ted Stevens was guilty. We heard him conspire on tape with Bill Allen. And no matter what the findings are, the man was guilty, is guilty of misconduct. And I believe, as a voter, I wanted somebody in there that was fresh, with fresh ideas, and hopefully a lot more honest.
Yeah, well, we haven't heard from a single caller who said, you know, I voted against Ted Stevens, but now I wish I'd have voted for him. We haven't heard one of those callers yet. I want to thank you. That's very good summarization there, Inez. Thanks for your call. Go ahead, Glenn.
I want to distinguish, Steve, between the question of what's Ted Stevens' legal status, which is that the convictions evaporated. I mean, and not precisely not the convictions, the guilty verdicts. You know, there was no judgment of conviction that, you know, with the sentence which the judge would impose. The guilty verdicts are evaporated, as Ted Stevens' lawyers said, it's like as if they never happened, right? So they went away and disappeared. I want to distinguish between the legal status of Ted Stevens, which is as a man who doesn't face any guilty verdicts or any sentencing, and on the other hand, what some people have talked about, his legacy, which they want to talk about at great length. And obviously, when someone has had a half century of public service like Ted Stevens, both in the U.S. Senate and years before that as a public official, there's a lot to talk about, as well as some people have said, the information and evidence that came out at the trial. Obviously, whether or not, obviously, the trial itself did not produce guilty verdicts, it stood. So there's those things people have talked about, both those things, and there's a lot, as I said, to talk about in terms of Steve's career and Ted Stevens' role in Alaska public life, both in terms of all the things he did outside the things that came out of that courtroom, as well as the things that did.
Well, you know, I believe it was Mike Gravel's case that brought the speech and debate clause to the point where we have it, where it's very hard now to prosecute a senator for any official action.
It's difficult. Obviously, there are are similar defenses that have been offered in various cases, and there are some state legislators, former Alaska state legislators, of course, sitting in federal prison today. So it's not impossible, and there are obviously other members of Congress who have been successfully prosecuted. These trials are rare. This was the first trial of a sitting U.S. senator in more than 25 years, both because there's only 100 U.S. senators at a time and also because you don't usually have trials.
Well, we did get a reaction now from Senator Mark Begich, saying nobody should have to go through a trial with so many problems and errors by the prosecutors. I believe the judge in this case has looked at all the evidence and all of the activity that occurred and has made the right decision. I support the move by the judge to appoint a special prosecutor to look into the full extent of the case. I have always said that I respect the service Senator Stevens gave to our state and our country for 40 years, and that respect remains today. That today from Mark Begich just came out from his office. Let's go ahead and go to William, joins the program from Fairbanks. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, William.
Yes, good morning. One of the things I'm curious about is the federal income tax situation. Is Stevens going to pay income tax on all these goods and services he received? Is the federal government going to get what everyone else has to pay, the income tax on goods and services that somebody receives? Also, what are the implications with regard to his son, Ben Stevens? I don't know if you recall the news conference that Stevens had about 3 years ago in September when he was saying that he had no idea his son was on the marketing board, and he had the memos from Max Paxton, his fisheries employee that would prove that. And then pesto changeo, come Monday when the reporters asked for those memos, he said that only applied to the news conference. Could you describe what you think about first the income tax angle and second the earmarked $30 million so that went to the fisheries board, and then his son, the head of the fisheries board, in return received hundreds of thousands of dollars in consultant fees from the beneficiaries of these federal earmarks?
Well, I will say,
listen to your response.
All right. Thank you very much. We do know that a jury in Seattle, a grand jury in Seattle, has been looking into that fisheries money. I am guessing but not sure that the speech and debate clause makes it very difficult to prosecute a U.S. senator for something that's done as an official act. It's just a guess on my part, and Cliff's being fuzzy on it too.
I will say that there are obviously successful prosecutions that have occurred of legislative members of Congress. Members of Congress, and also of the state legislature, despite state and federal protections that result to tie into their status as legislators. Obviously, there's some people that has not blocked the prosecutions up. It has made it more difficult, and there have been some rulings about it. I want to answer an earlier question he had. Actually, as a general matter, the income or gifts people receive are not taxable to the recipient. So that was something that came out earlier that I blogged about, which is that was why this wasn't really that kind of tax issue, and he was not charged any tax violations. The problem was, it's a political matter. The prosecution kept saying that Ted Stevens could have never said and announced, "I've received all these gifts from Vico or Bill Allen," but it was not so much a question of tax.
You mean that the Internal Revenue Service, if it had documentation of lavish gifts that I'd received, somebody gave me, let's say, a Lamborghini or something, right? Okay, so here it is worth $40,000, and I didn't declare it on my income tax, that they can't come after me for tax on that? Give me a break.
There's a difference in terms of the taxability to the recipient is a different status, and that's why he was never prosecuted for that.
Okay. I'm glad we have someone with legal expertise with us. Let's go to Tom, joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Tom.
Yes. Good morning. There's no doubt in my mind that there was a violation of Ted's due process rights, but that he was as guilty as sin because after all of the bills were received, he clearly indicated that he wanted additional bills for services rendered after the last bill. So he had an obligation when not getting those additional bills to assess the value of the additional services and equipment that were provided after the last billing and report that as a gift.
Okay, so let's see. As I recall, the invoices, Bob Persons was in charge of gathering up the invoices, if I have this
that
right.
That was the general testimony.
And some invoices he never got and he never paid.
And he didn't get any invoices from Vika itself for the renovations.
Yeah. And yeah, we do have the telephone conversation that he was aware that work was done by Vika that presumably had a value.
And a lot of email messages. And when people ask why the prosecution was brought, right, why the indictment came, the Department of Justice brought the indictment, and why the prosecutors seemed convinced and the juries, I think, seemed affected by this, an important fact was that those boot camps – all the time that Ted Stevens and Bill Allen spent together before and after these renovations were occurred, which obviously occurred over a period of time, and there were a couple of stages of them. And I will say, this is another hypothetical question that's obviously occurred to me recently, I do think that if Ted Stevens had ever sat down and written some sort of check to Vico and or Bill Allen for some sort of reasonable approximation of fair market value on the renovations, that it's a lot less likely he would have been prosecuted, and there would have been much more like what people of you and Libby were talking about, the Senate Ethics Investigation Committee investigation, if anything.
Tom?
The question I have for Cliff is, what is the discretion of the judge to dismiss without prejudice after a trial? I mean, clearly the case as it stood was illegitimate and should be dismissed, but what's the discretion for dismissal without prejudice?
Or with prejudice is what happened. You're saying, well, couldn't he have done it without prejudice if he wanted to?
Right.
It wasn't in the motion, but he could still do it, right?
The power of the judge had the power under the law to either order a new trial or to effectively end the case altogether. When the Attorney General announced last Wednesday that the Department of Justice and the Department of Justice put in a filing that it was going to agree to the motion to set aside the verdicts and to dismiss the indictment with prejudice, obviously the judge was going to grant it when Attorney General Eric Holder threw in the towel on the case. The question of why the Attorney General Holder took the extra step of going beyond just saying let's vacate the jury verdicts, but instead let's not have a new trial at all, goes to some of the factors. I think that some of the factors Libby described went to that in terms of some of the reporting, especially by Nina Totenberg of National Public Radio, has discussed some of the factors that Attorney General Holder apparently considered in making that extra unusual step.
Yeah, well, that's adding insult to injury. Just because the Bush DOJ violated due process, the public still, deserves justice in this case, and dismissal with prejudice in that instance denies the public the right to have the answer where there's clear evidence of failure to comply with the reporting requirements.
This kind of thing occurs in the sense of the question of dismissals by prosecutors of cases on a discretionary basis because they're unhappy sometimes with the conduct of the police or the government in the case occurs every week around the country. This is obviously a very high-profile case, and it's very unusual, obviously, for Senator Ted Stevens, who's so beloved by many Alaskans, to be talked of in the same breath as Guantanamo detainees or people the federal government often charges, people like drug dealers or bank robbers. What's so unusual about this case in part is obviously the high-profile nature of the charges and the defendant.
Tom, thanks.
Okie doke, thanks.
All right. With this one from T. Hale, I have it on good advice from a CPA friend that there's a million ways to accept big bribes and have it all look legal. I don't for a moment believe Stevens paid much for the work on his house, no matter what iffy documents turned up later, nor do I discount Bill Allen's testimony that Stevens knew all along what was happening. Stevens, whether or not he was good for Alaska by bringing the pork home, has been corrupt for many years. So that's that came in over email, talk@APRN.org. And let's go now to Frank in Bethel. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Frank.
Morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
in our culture, we respect our elders, and obviously Uncle Ted is an elder, respected elder, and my comment is that he got caught with his hand in the cookie jar and during the wrong time of the year when this was an election year, and whether the candidates for his seat saw this opportunity, I don't think there should be any reason now that he's acquitted that a special re-election or that Mark Beckett should step down. That's my comment.
Thank you, Frank, and you're not the only one that feels that way. Most of the callers have said that one. This one in from over the email, I just wanted to comment on the Republicans in this state calling for Beckett to step down and have another election. I think that's the dumbest thing I ever heard of. Stevens lost. Get over it. And let's go to Kodiak and Terry. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Terry.
Oh, hi, Steve. Thanks for taking my call.
Don't tell me you're going to bring up Crab Rat. Don't. You're not going to bring up Crab Rat, are you?
Oh, no, no.
Well, good.
Although, you know, it's all part of the big picture, I think. But I would argue that there's been a culture that was on trial there, not just the one. I think most Alaskans would agree that it was pretty small potatoes, what Vico did for him in his house there when compared to the hundreds of millions of dollars of value that we're talking in Boeing contracts or fisheries favors or things for these companies like Vico. I mean, I would argue that over time, Ted Stevens lost contact with the people. He became insulated. He only saw a certain group, a very select, usually high-ranking businessmen. And then he took advice from them, and I think he thought maybe he was serving Alaska, but he was really serving a very select group of people. And in addition to that, he decided it was okay to do an end around in our system in Washington. And, you know, he used his powerful chairmanships on committees like Appropriations and Commerce to ram through legislation that otherwise would never have survived the public process. And I think that that's what was on trial there. And as Alaskans, are we really comfortable with a culture in which we essentially have a man who's powerful enough to get around the system, supersede the system? He may bring home the bacon for Alaska, but I think we have to ask ourselves, is it really right?
Well, I think that is very closely reasoned, Terry, and I want to thank you very much for your call.
All right. Thank you, Steve.
Yes, there is the court of public opinion, of course, and we're seeing the public opinion, you know, that we're getting over the phones is that they're not all that approving of Ted Stevens, even though the judge has thrown out his conviction. Cliff Crow?
Steve, of course, it's not a crime to be arrogant, or a lot of people would be in prison. On the other hand, a lot of people have noted, including me on my blog, that at the time it looked as though Senator Stevens' testimony on his own behalf, which looks like another decision very much that he made, did not help him with that jury. And juror interviewers after the jury rendered the verdicts indicated that as well. Obviously, on the other hand, those jury verdicts are now wiped out. In the legal sense, they don't matter anymore, and this is Ted Stevens' day in that sense.
Yes, this from Eric in Valdez. Put on your tinfoil hat, friends. Given the other problems that turn up, the cynic in me asks, could it be that the Bush Department of Justice purposely threw this trial? Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe, you know, if such were the case in some way, perhaps evidence of it will come to light during this probe that Judge Sullivan has asked for, because clearly he was concerned.
I've been very surprised before by some of the twists and turns in this case. If that occurs, I'll be the most stunned ever. As I said to you earlier, Steve, when we were talking about doing this program, some of the developments in this case, as you pointed out, the Bush Justice Department prosecuting the powerful Ted Stevens, a highly influential Republican U.S. senator, and the Obama Justice Department dismissing the charges with prejudice and allegedly and basically letting him go, have caused people's head to almost explode in Alaska. that one might make my head explode if it was ever found by a competent investigator that, in fact, the Bush Justice Department threw this case.
Well, Cliff, you just haven't done enough talk radio. That's why you take that tinfoil containment device and place it atop your cranium. Otherwise, you're going to get in all kinds of trouble. Also, if you're really an aficionado, you make a trail of paperclips and let it drag on the ground at all times. As Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from First National Bank Alaska, working shoulder to shoulder with Alaskan businesses for nearly a century. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
It's Talk of Alaska, and Libby Casey has filed back in here with a list of the prosecutors who are going to be investigated by the special prosecutor, and we'll recognize these names, Sullivan, Gakey, Marsh, Bottini, Welsh, and Morris. Judge Sullivan said he hopes Special Prosecutor Henry Shoki finds no intentional obstruction of justice. That's from Libby Casey, who was in the courtroom today when Judge Sullivan threw out Senator Ted Stevens' conviction on a motion presented by the Justice Department, which had brought the case itself. It's Talk of Alaska. We've got Attorney Cliff Groh with us, and we have a panoply of Alaskan opinion. Let's go to Anchorage and Bill. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Bill.
Hi, Steve. This is Bill.
Hi, Bill.
I just wanted to comment. I'm a lifelong Democrat. I voted for Begich. I gave him, I volunteered for him putting up signs. I also appeared in one of his commercials as a volunteer. And I'm very happy with the statement that you just read from his office. I think that's a very well thought through response to this whole situation. But my main comment is on the Justice Department in general, and that they have a long history of this kind of crap. And that is that, you know, you go back to Abscam, Brilab, Operation Frumention, and these were mainly almost always directed at Democrats, right? Now, there's been time and time and time again where this kind of political interference by the Justice Department has been blatant, absolutely blatant. And this is not, you know, being reported. It has not been thoroughly researched. Sullivan's move now, I hope, will begin to clear this crap up. And I want to compliment the Obama administration on having, you know, for, you know, under the Justice Department of Obama, this kind of thing seems now to be being looked into. And I think it's just extremely important. Whether, you know, I mean, I've been hearing people say he's guilty, he's guilty, he's guilty. And yet, what evidence do they have? They have the evidence that came to them from the prosecution, and yet we know that the evidence was not complete. So what on how are they making this judgment, right? Are they making that on the basis of incomplete evidence, and they're just happy as hell about that? I'm not.
All right, Bill. Thank you. Thank you very much for your call. And I think you raise some good points. I mean, any prosecutor is going to be selective about the evidence they present. But the problem is, I think, not so much what went into the courtroom as what wasn't shared with the defense team.
Right. And as an historical matter, I would say that it would appear that a reason a lot of Democrats were prosecuted before was that Democrats for many decades controlled Congress and had a great, you know, substantial majorities in the Congress. And I do not, I do think there were some successful prosecutions over the last 40 to 50 years of public officials, including members of Congress, and that the public integrity section has been involved in some of that public corruption work around the United States. It may be that the Ted Stevens case helps highlight some of the problems recently in the management of public integrity cases. There has been some press reporting about that in the last few days since Wednesday's announcement.
Here's an email that points to the fact that there was another candidate who suddenly pops into the state and spends a whole lot of money doing nothing but accusing Ted Stevens of corruption, and that obviously played into the edge that that Begich had over Stevens and made it smaller than it might have been, which is a good point, I think.
I have no comment except to say that was obviously true. Many odd things happen in elections. I don't think that anybody can show that there's been any, you know, any illegality about that. It was an odd event.
Let's go now to Petersburg and Colleen. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Colleen.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I'm just calling as an everyday voter who has followed all of this, and the more I hear about the legal questions, the more snarly everything seems to get. And so I just want to kind of wrap it up by saying that all the time that Ted Stevens was serving Alaska, and he did a lot of good things, we also knew that we were getting more than our share oftentimes. And so when the time came for him to be deciding whether we'd run again or not, 84 years old, I just thought, why doesn't he just retire and enjoy his years at home in the house that he's got, and let us be thankful for what we got, and now let someone else have a turn.
All right, Colleen, thank you. Put it behind us, and that's also the tone of Lou's email here, who says that, you know, if you look at it now, this is better than having been pardoned by President Bush. This is maybe the cleanest way we could have got out of this. And then he also throws in the question, how well did he really get along with President Bush and his administration? Now, that's maybe a rhetorical question because it's pretty well known that he did not get along all that well. Guess we'll try for one more call here, Cliff Groh. James, in Ketchikan, you've got the last word.
Oh, okay, great. I would say, first I'd like to say Senator Stevens is, you know, it's obvious he's guilty. I mean, he was thrown out on the case was thrown out on a technicality. I mean, there's hundreds of millions in Alaskan, there was, I mean, hundreds of millions in oil money at stake there. But I'm wondering if they let him go because under the mandatory sentencing laws that have over-blossomed our jails with people, overcrowded our jails with people, you know, they might have to send his wife to prison.
Well, family members do figure into this, and probably, you know, as this case unfolds, James, I think family members will figure into this more and more. I mean, clearly, we saw a concern for family members on the part of Bill Allen, concern for his business. What would happen? They could have taken all that away from him. He made a deal with the prosecution that they not do that. So there is something to that, James. Thank you for your call from Ketchikan. Well, Cliff Groh, you know, you're going to have to keep the last few chapters open for a while, I think.
I'm doing my best on that. So obviously it's been some amazing series of events. I'd urge Alaskans to think about what today's events mean about our criminal justice system and about our entire system allowed the Alaska Public Corruption Investigation and the underlying events to occur. All the facets, obviously a total of 12 defendants, we've been charged.
It is something to think about. There's no doubt about it. Well, I want to thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks, Steve.
Your blog is, once again, alaskacorruption.blogspot.com until the traffic gets too big for Blogspot to handle.
We can only hope.
Cliff Groh has been our guest, along with Libby Casey. It's Gooseberry Peter at the controls, Pat Yak, and Lynn Anderson on the phones. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Steve Heimel.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.